Hey guys, it's Albert. We're basically right in the middle of the dead period in the calendar right now, so we're going to get a little weird. Some rosé is going to be involved. Some Instagram comments are going to be involved. Jenny and Connor are going to be involved. And we will get to your questions in the sick pack like we always do. Let's go. All right, welcome back. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We are back, and because we're sort of in the dead period of the year, I think we're going to jump right into our news topics. So Jenny and Connor are going to come in, but first I do have a piece of unfinished business that I have to take care of here. And because I'm a man of my word,
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Dr. V, Jenny Vrentes, the master of the mock draft.
Whoa.
This is so exciting.
There you go.
Yes.
I had to go to four different stores this morning. So
Albert.
I texted Bette, one of our editors. I texted Bette. I was like, where can I go in the building? So she said, either try La District or Rite Aid. Neither of them had anything, right? So then I went down the street, down West Street. I think it's West End Ave here, right? Or West Street?
West Street.
Went down West Street, and I went into a grocery store, which only had one brand that looked really cheap. And my whole thing is, like, if there's only one brand, it's probably not good, right?
Wow, this is dedication,
fair?
Albert.
And
I
so
really
I asked, is this all you have? They said, yes, but there's a wine store right next door. So I texted my wife, and I said, what's a decent bottle of rosé that won't make me look like a cheapskate? She said, Whispering Angel.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I went into the wine store. I asked, they have Whispering Angel. I think this place was sort of one of those boutique type places where maybe you don't get the bigger brand names.
Right.
It's just sort of their things. And so that's where I got that.
This is great.
Wow.
So there you go.
That was
congratulations,
a lot of dedication.
Jenny.
I
she
really
deserves
it.
She earned that.
Oh, 100%.
She earned that because she crushed that mock draft.
You know, by guessing randomly which players would go teams, I earned a bottle
no,
of
no,
rosé.
No. Don't let Jenny downplay it. She made phone calls. She nailed it. Jenny, enjoy that bottle of rosé. I am a man of my word. I took care of you.
Thank you.
Yes.
This is just really
Brandon's
made
the only
week.
One. Brandon's the only one in the room who knew. I gave Brandon a little bit of heads up, but I was going to text Connor. I was a little afraid Connor might spill to Jenny, so I had to be careful about that.
That's probably true, actually.
Yeah, I'm completely untrustworthy.
Big gossip over here.
100%. Yes.
All right, so we're going to jump right into our news items. Like I said, it's a little bit of a slower time of year, so we're going to have some fun here. We're eventually, I think, going to talk about some Instagram investigations, Jenny. Maybe we can talk about that a little later in the show.
This might be my only skill.
Are you okay?
I'm sure, yeah.
Everybody's got
that thing that I'm good at.
Everybody's got like that to look forward to. So once we get through our news topics, which aren't all that serious because of the time of year to begin with, we will get into Jenny's Instagram investigations, which I just came to my attention over the last, 45 minutes or so?
Yeah.
But we're going to throw it in there because it's really interesting. All right, so news topic number one for the week. Jets running back Le'Veon Bell missed his first minicamp with the team, a voluntary camp during draft week. This week he explained his absence on social media, saying, I got to stick to the formula I know works for me. I think it was a bad look not to show up for his first minicamp. Like, these guys have a right to do whatever they want with their time, but I don't think that all of these are created equal. Like, if Malcolm Jenkins doesn't want to show up because he wants his contract adjusted, good, do it. If there's a 30-year-old veteran on some team who his family lives out of state and he's going to work on his own, fine, no problem at all. But this is a guy who sat out a year and now is in this situation where, you know, the team hasn't had a lot of success over the last few years. They've got a new coaching staff. They've got this extra mini camp. This is going to be the first chance to kind of for everybody to set a tone on what the Jets are going to be like in this new era. And I just think it's a bad look not to show up for that. Like that, I just think it's these aren't all created equal. And if you're the highest paid guy on the team, and I believe he will be now, if you're the highest paid guy on the team, then maybe is he making less than Tremaine Johnson? Whatever, he's up there. I think you have to show up.
Speaking of new age, how about he replies in the Instagram comments and then screenshots it and reposts that on social media? So, I mean, that's this is we're getting.
Well, it was a fan asked him, right?
A fan asked him.
So
I think
this is
he
a preview
replied
of what
in
you're
going to
hear about later.
But yeah, this is a preview. But it's interesting that, you know, but I think he probably felt like he wanted to share why he wasn't there. There's been a lot of chatter, especially in New York, you know, how things get in New York, right? There's been a lot of chatter. Where is he? So I think he probably wanted to share it. I don't really have a problem with it. The guys aren't paid to participate in the offseason program, right? So a lot of people around the league do their own thing. Mm-hmm. I understand what you're saying. You know, you do installs, you learn an offense. But he showed up for the first at the very beginning, right? And then he'll come back for the mandatory minicamp, I'm sure. And then he'll be there in camp. So, you know, I think a lot of times veteran guys have certain routines that they're in to get their bodies ready, and he probably feels like that's most important right now.
Okay, well, two things there. Number one, my favorite part of this story was that he did a draft event, I think in New York City, on Thursday night, which was the last day of the minicamp. So it's not like he wasn't local, right? Like, he was 30 miles away, whatever it is, to Florham Park from here. Like, the other part of it that I'm like, a lot of this stuff this time of year is just lifting weights and all kinds of stuff you could do anyway, right? And so if you have your own routine for that, there are guys, Brady's one, like there are guys that train a different way, that work a different way. And so if you want to skip that because you don't agree with the way that the team is running strength and conditioning, that's something. But like for the on-field work, like the first time you're going to be on the field as a team and you're actually doing stuff that you can't get anywhere else, like, because that's the stuff that I feel like, and I don't think this is going to affect him. Like, I don't think this is going to affect his ability to perform in the fall. I don't know. It's just like a weird tone to set. Like, again, maybe it won't have any effect at all. It's just, it feels to me like that's a weird tone for one of the star players of the team to set with a new coach coming, especially when he just got paid.
I think it's one of those things, too, where I don't know how much we all consider, you know, the medical people, the trainers, like everything's different from, you know, and if you have that comfort zone, I guess why not just stay in your comfort zone? Plus, it's like.
But for 3 days?
But I don't know, like when you were a kid and you were walking past your elementary school on the way to get some ice cream to hang out with your friends on the weekend, and it was the summer. Do you stop in at the school and just say hey to people if it's like a teacher in service day, or do you keep going because it reminds you of work and so you don't want to go there? You know, you just mentally, maybe it's just a cleansing, you know?
My sense, I think, you know, he took a break. Obviously, he didn't play last year, but then once the deadline passed for him to report, he kind of took a break from all conditioning and everything. And I have a feeling he's just sort of taking this ramping it back process. I'm sure he had a plan laid out, right? And he's going to just steadily follow that and to get, you know, ready for the season. So I feel like he just probably had this mapped out and he's following it. You know, I think, you know, like I said, I think a lot of times veteran guys like to do their own thing.
Do you think there's an element of I'm doing this because I can?
I don't think so. I honestly don't.
I
think he just likes to do things his own way.
Okay.
Right? As we saw from the holdout, right?
Yeah.
He did things his way, the way he wanted to do them. And I think he just, that's...
It's just like sometimes you have your... If it's a because I can thing, then that's, I think, sort of an issue.
I don't think so. I don't think he's never been a bad locker room guy.
Yeah.
Look, I know that things in Pittsburgh at the end took a turn, but he's never was.
Yeah,
you never
true.
Heard anything that he was a bad locker room guy. I don't think that was true in Pittsburgh. I don't think it'll be true in New York.
I mean, my whole thing, and we can agree to disagree on this. Like my whole thing, like it's. I mean, one when you get paid like that, like I think you got a different place in the locker room because we've all been in those locker rooms. You guys know they. Players keep score by contracts, right? Like they look to like the way that the guys who are the highest paid guys in the team are acting, the way they're treated, all of that different stuff. So I do think that there's a nuance there to being the guy who just got paid, where it's sort of people are going to follow you and watch you. And again, like to me, it's like there are certain checkpoints in the offseason where it'd be good if he was in. You know, like again, it's not going to. I don't think it's going to affect his season personally. For a team that's got like seems to have a lot going on. And, like, look, potential acrimony, like, between the front office and the coaching staff and this sort of an arranged marriage and all of that. I just think there's a lot to watch there. That's all.
Maybe it's like a filtration technique, and he's staying away to find out who's leaking the stuff, and he knows to stay away from those guys, you know?
That'd be next level.
It's like a flush it and see where it goes kind of thing.
That'd be pretty interesting. Okay, Jenny, Connor, who wants to take the second one?
I got it. Chargers quarterback Philip Rivers said this week that he is at peace with playing out the final year of his current contract with the team. He's one of a number of older quarterbacks who went into this offseason in the last year of their deals. Ben Roethlisberger has since been extended, while Eli Manning and Tom Brady have not.
I thought this one was an interesting talk, just because, like, we don't hear a lot about Eli being in a contract year, but he is, right? And, like, you're starting to hear things leaking out of the Manning camp that he wants to play past this year. Brady has already said that he wants to play past this year repeatedly, and he doesn't have a contract. And so Rivers is sitting out there too. And you see the way that quarterback contracts are just sort of exploding now. And it's like, if you're these teams, what do you do? Do you ask them to take less? Like, Ben didn't take a whole lot less. I think Ben's was 32 a year, something like that. So if, I mean, the Patriots, like Brady, all Brady has to do is sit there. Because his cap number is $27 million this year. If he sits there, they have to tag him next year, and his tag number is 32.4, right? Eli and Rivers, it's not to that degree because their cap numbers aren't as big this year, but they're both like in the 27s. So those guys can both sit there. All these guys can sit there, and it's like get much closer to the top of the market. If you're one of these guys, like that's the other thing, is do you force the issue? I think it's interesting because it's just like where's the middle ground for each of these guys? Ben clearly did not take a discount. Like, I think it's an interesting question to ask. Rivers has been paid at the top of the market since he was younger. Eli's been paid at the top of the market since he's younger. Will those guys take less, and will Brady continue to take less?
I don't know. I mean, I think if I'm any of those guys, I mean, you have to take care of yourself.
Could be your last bite of the apple, too.
Yeah, and you have to stay on this Ferris wheel, right? Because what happens if like a couple quarterbacks start getting off? And you know, I mean, Brady's different because however that salary works, you know, I mean, I think that situation is just different in New England. But you know, if all these guys start hopping off the Ferris wheel, all of a sudden, I think you're impacting, everybody else's right to earn. You know what I mean? And right now, it's a pretty sweet deal where everyone that signs a new contract is essentially just making $1 million less than the previous guy.
All right, so let's make this simple then. I think we can all agree this one. We'll just get this one out of the way. If Brady goes to the Patriots asking for a new contract, you give it to him, right?
Right.
We're all good there.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. If Eli goes to the Giants asking for a new contract, what do you say if you're John Mara? I gave you the easy one first. And we got a little bit of an easier one next. This is the tough one.
What do you say?
What do you say?
Or what is
John,
will you say?
If you're John Mara, what do you say?
That's a good
if
question.
If Eli
Connor.
Manning comes to you tomorrow and says, I want to keep playing. I want it to be here. I know you just drafted my successor. I want a chance to compete. I want a new contract now.
I say, I'm going to tell you something that somebody has never told you before, which is no.
Wow.
Wow. Wow.
That would be that would be confrontational.
This is why I don't own the Giants have any sort of high ranking position anywhere. Yeah. I emotionally cannot handle.
So what would
a
you do,
Jen? Like that?
I think I would say no to. Like, I'm with Connor. I think I would say no also.
I agree. I just don't know that they would. Right.
Yeah.
The ideal situation would to be to handle it like a coach contract, where you just kind of like add a year on. You know, right. You just kind of like make them not
like
a lame
the fake
dog.
Of the fake
yeah,
option
you know?
Year. Like, yeah.
Yeah. That would be ideal. I mean, if they say they don't want to rush Daniel Jones, they've probably got to have a plan beyond this year.
I mean, I would say he probably has less leverage. Like, Eli probably has less leverage now that they have the guy that they. And
yes.
Well, no matter what you think of Daniel
right.
Jones, the guy's in the building now, right?
Right.
Like, so like, the next guy's in the building now. So, like, I would think Eli lost a little leverage there, but if I'm the Giants, I probably say, just, you know what I say? I say wait.
Totally, just play
and
out
I
the
and
year.
I want to see. I want to see like 3 months. Of Daniel Jones in the building. Don't need to see him in games. Just want to see 3 months of what he looks like in the building and get an idea of whether or not he's going to be ready in 2020. And I'll say at the end of the summer, let's talk. And it might be a no at the end of the summer. If Jones looks good, maybe it's a no at the end of the summer. Chargers, if Philip Rivers comes to you, what do you say?
Yeah, totally yes. I mean, because they
100%.
They're definitely counting on him playing beyond this year, right? Mm-hmm. Because they haven't made that bold move to get a successor. I mean, they took Easton Stick in a mid-round, you know, so they haven't.
Well, there were the Giants were with Kyle O'Leary last year. It's
correct,
like,
right. Just, you know, take a quarterback in a.
And
I mean,
see what happens.
Yeah, just the old take a quarterback a year in a late round thing, right? So.
Yeah. I think that they should have been, honestly. I think they're a team that should have been in the Josh Rosen business. To me, like they're the team that like stuck out to me throughout. And I know they didn't love him, but they're the team that stuck out to me. Like that would have been like I think a worthwhile swing for them to flip a second round pick to because they got a pretty complete roster, right? Like, they don't have any glaring holes they really had to take care of. I mean, I think that they did well in the draft. Like, I think Adderley's going to be a good safety for them. Jerry Tillery should be a good player playing next to Bosa and Ingram. Like, but I wouldn't, to me, it's like they were the team that made the most sense, like, as a Rosen suitor.
It's interesting, too. I mean, you know, if you're the Giants, what is the – there is no leverage working against you, right? Because right. What even – you know, we had talked about this a couple times in the podcast about sort of the settling of the quarterback market, and a lot of teams are much more content than they used to be. What would the market even look like for him right now? I mean, where would he start other than New York?
It almost feels like, you know, there was a market for a few years there where it was like for the bridge – And the price on the bridge went up, and now it seems like it's collapsed.
That's a great point.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like because you had Sam Bradford getting Sam Bradford
Glennon.
Got 20, Tyrod got 16.
Yeah,
like so you had like this market where all these bridge this year did that happen once?
Josh McCown got a ton.
Yeah,
it's because all those teams were preparing for that year when there were five quarterbacks in the draft in the first round,
and all those teams were like, all right, like let's bring in a guy that we feel comfortable starting. If the rookie isn't ready to start, and you know we're good with the price, that's fine. Like that's what a quarterback costs. I mean, now you see,
Flacco's a bridge guy, potentially, but maybe not even.
Like, look at the Redskins didn't spend, right? Like, Arizona,
right.
Arizona, which they paid Sam Bradford last year. They got Brett Hundley for, less than $5 million, I think? I don't have it in front of me, but, like, there's, like, maybe that bridge quarterback market isn't there anymore. So maybe for Eli, there isn't a whole lot.
The end of that McAdoo season where he was benched, that was the time, right? I mean, that was the time to go if you were going to go. But I think that there was either no foresight there or no desire, I guess, to move on.
And I don't think Eli – so neither of them are in the class of Brady. Rivers I don't think is that far off, and I don't think Eli's in the class of Rivers or Brady anymore. Like, I don't think Eli – like, I would put Rivers and Eli in two different categories.
I would say Eli and Flacco. I would say
that's actually
together,
probably
you know?
Pretty fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think Flacco, like, where, again, like, Flacco's, like, in Denver, the guy who, the thing is, like, Flacco had, like, 3 years left on his contract, but Flacco's the guy in Denver where it's like, hey, let's see if this works out. And if not, his contract's not guaranteed. We traded a fourth round pick for him. So no big deal if it doesn't work out.
Yeah. That's what I meant about, like, not even a bridge guy, because it's not like they, like, invested a ton. It wasn't, like, those big bridge contracts. Plus, they don't even know. I mean, Locke might not even work out. You know, they might have to go dip in the quarterback.
They
well
might,
again.
But they've got the flexibility to do it. Like, that's what I like about where Denver's at, right? Like, Denver, they only spent us two on Locke. So it's like, if it doesn't work out, then you can still draft Tua next year or Herbert next year. Like, you're fine. Like, it's not, I think Denver maintained most of their flexibility. Anyway, we're way off track now. Connor, news item number three.
On Friday, Bears coach Matt Nagy pitted the eight kickers the team invited to rookie minicamp.
This is my favorite story of the week, by the way.
And put them in competition against each other, seeing who could kick a 43-yard field goal in one shot with all their teammates watching. 43 yards is the distance from which ex-Bear Cody Parkey missed a potential game winner against the Eagles in last year's playoffs. And then he traded for another kicker.
Right, so I think only two of the eight made it, right?
Two of the eight made it, and now there's a third kicker involved.
From the Raiders.
My question for Matt Nagy is, was someone blocking the 43-yard kicks? Like, did you have someone... Cody Parkey's kick was affected. It was blocked, wasn't it?
Yeah.
This is a Pruder film.
All right. This may not be the most... Like, I know like this has been like kind of like portrayed as like a clown show. I don't mind it. Like, because I think whoever the kicker is going to have that hanging over his head the whole year, right? Like, whoever you bring in is going to have, like, the whole, like, everything that happened in the playoffs next year is going to be hanging over who the kicker is.
I think that making this comically large display out of what you're doing, you're almost ensuring, you're guaranteeing cosmically that you will have another situation like this.
I feel the same way, Connor. I really feel the same way. I feel like... With that position in particular,
they're like golfers.
Because you had that quote, right, where they said, oh, we're not running from it. We're confronting it head on. I feel like that's the wrong way to go with the kicking position.
Yes.
So you just think you erase it.
Yeah, like you just like, you know, bury the
football. Bury the ball. Yes.
Bury the ball. Yeah. We both had the same idea because we remember when Rex did that.
I think Belichick actually did that during their first championship season too. Like they had a ceremony in the practice field or something like that.
I feel like every coach has done that. There's probably a lot of I wonder how many buried footballs there are in practice fields.
Footballs just underground. Yeah.
What happens to those footballs, by the way? We could do like an environmental study.
Is it bad for the environment if they're under there?
I would love to know the answer to that question.
I mean, because if it is, like, maybe the team has to send somebody out afterwards when the players aren't looking to dig it back out.
I was going to say, is it too much to ask to just use an environmentally friendly football, biodegradable football? I'm sure that those exist out there.
You probably could find one.
A football made of, like, recycled materials.
It'd be a little bit of a production getting it out there, though, so it looks like it's organic when the coach does it, right? Like, he just pulls a bat ball out
of
it.
I guess it's, you know, a cowhide, so yeah. It is.
Would that be biodegradable?
Returning it to the
earth. This is not my area of expertise.
I'm really embarrassed. Like I have a biochemistry degree, and I'm flailing to answer this question here, doing Eberly College of Science at Penn State a disservice here.
So what you guys are saying is like the golfer thing, right? Like even being a little off can like screw like a golfer up completely.
Definitely.
And so. I just think I like it because I think that like the whole team's gonna have to deal with it, right? Like, and I think like doing it now like may help you like get past it, right? Like, because you're going to have to deal with it in the fall no matter what, and so if you've dealt with it now, I think that you maybe have at least psychologically. Like, I think you'd almost turn it into a joke now, right? Like, you use the word comical, Connor. Like, I think the idea that you could like almost turn this into a running joke. Might actually work for you.
I think confronting it in a joking way is good. I think like lining them all up like it's the practice round of the Hunger Games is probably not, you know, your best move. I think it's just such a delicate position, right? Yeah. I mean, it's all psyche based, and
but there may not be any good answer here. Like, you remember, like, and this is my childhood. Like my memory of like the big kick or miss in my childhood was Scott Norwood. Right? Like, and I don't know, are you guys too young for that? Like,
no, I remember that.
Okay, so Norwood, like, was one of
I remember it live. Like, obviously, we all are aware of it.
Was the best kicker in the league, right? Or one of the best kickers in the league that year. And I believe, and we have to look this up, but I believe he was, like, one of the worst kickers the next year and then out of football the year after that. Like, it was, like, it absolutely took a toll on him. And so
yeah.
I just think it's, like, sort of one of those... It kind of depends on the mental, like the psychology of whoever's going to be in that position. Like maybe there's nothing you can do about it. Maybe it just depends on the person, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the idea of being a high draft pick as a kicker and the pressure getting to you, like Aguayo, yeah. And I mean even Nugent.
Bucks
to
took
a degree.
Another Bucks took
Bucks
another,
another kicker. Yeah, I know. So it's, you know,
it's almost like they're trolling us with that one. Yeah,
I do think it's a factor with kickers. Like Blair Walsh, right?
And just a little bit off, like just a little bit of like a hitch in your step can mess you up.
Yeah, I don't know that I would have gone that route, but maybe the kicker they'll have was not even in that. Maybe that was just like
I don't think they have any idea.
That was that was the sacrifice, and then whoever you.
What are you looking for there? Like, I mean, obviously it's like pressure, right? That you're putting them in like a pressure, like a competitive situation. And I guess you could argue that like you're kicking for your salary. And so what bigger pressure would it be than feeding your family, you know, or whatever your situation is. But I don't know. I mean, it's still different, you know? I mean, how do you replicate that? And then be okay with that decision, you know? I mean, what if they all make the same... What if the last three guys all make the same kick, again, in the same conditions, against the same defense? You just keep, you know, what point does it make sense that, like, okay, well, this is our guy, you know?
Here's what I'm wondering. If they have a 43-yard field goal next year, or with looking like it's going to be that, do you just, like, lose a yard on a rushing play? You know, like, would you rather kick 44 than a 43? You know, let's just move it back a little bit.
Hell no, we're not kicking from here.
So it's just one of those. Like, I don't think we know until we see whoever the kicker is going to be in that situation. I do think one benefit here, too, is that the rest of the team is like sort of confronting it. Like, and I think that for the rest of the team, it's sort of a factor too, because it's something that they're going to have to, talk about like at points in the fall anyway. And so doing it now when it sort of doesn't mean anything is, I don't think a big deal.
I think the bottom line in this is, if you're worried about it, why try to create something organically instead of putting your foot down and spending some of your remaining salary cap on it? Go get Steven Gostkowski, you know?
Yeah.
Go get one of the four or five best kickers on the market, like a, you know.
Yeah, Gostkowski sat out there for like a month,
yeah,
too.
Right.
One of these, you know, one of these Silver Fox types.
Just
in
go
their
overpay
40s
him a little bit. Just go overpay him a little bit.
Yeah. And then say, hey, we fixed the problem, you know?
Silver Fox types.
Vinatieri was like...
Oh, Vinatieri is beyond Silver Fox.
Nobody has grayed more beautifully than Adam Vinatieri.
But I mean, are there other options? Are there other silver?
Phil Dawson, right? He was the Silver Fox.
Was he a
connoisseur of the Silver Fox, Connor?
I think he was
I'm
a salt...
I'm
going to
stay out of this conversation.
Vinatieri is like pure Silver Fox now. Like
Vinatieri looks like, do you ever see the movie The Santa Claus with Tim Allen?
Yes.
And it's like when he gets the silver beard, but before he gains all the Santa Claus weight, that's what Adam Vinatieri looks like, right, which is a great look.
I'm Googling Phil Dawson.
I don't know
right
if he,
now.
I think he's got a little salt and pepper.
Oh yeah, you got it. Yeah, no, he's bald and salt. The beard is gray though. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
So.
Oh man, God, I didn't realize he looked that old.
I think he looks great.
He looks like Mr. Clean, doesn't he? Is that a decent comp, Mr. Clean?
But how could you not look into that face and think that he's going to drill a 43-yard field goal?
Yeah.
Like, if that guy looked at me in the eyes and said just about anything, I'm going to complete this task, I would totally believe him.
Strong jaw.
Well, yeah.
Strong jaw, strong neck, yeah.
Don't turn this into that.
Guys,
the issue with...
Don't make
no,
this.
Actually, I was just going to comment that then you have the kickoff question with the older guys. I was
true.
Just I was
that,
going
that's
that
a good
route.
Point. Yeah.
Just trying
yeah.
to get us back on yeah. back on track
yeah.
here.
Definitely getting us back on the rails, which
definitely,
is good.
Definitely steering this conversation.
Okay, more serious topic now. News item number 4. Bucks defensive tackle Gerald McCoy took to social media on Sunday with his status with the team uncertain and fired back at his critics, and I'm going to use the little quote signals there, critics, cuz I'm not sure where this criticism was coming from, saying on his Instagram story, lots of Instagram this week, Cinco de Mayo, everybody out, probably getting ready to go drink, probably drinking right now. It don't matter. They want to question me. This is what I do on Cinco de Mayo. I work. I was not aware that working on Cinco de Mayo was the kind of sacrifice that's being made out to be here. I mean, I think Cinco de Mayo was on a Sunday this year. Fair. Like, so he's working on the weekend, but it often comes on a Friday or a Wednesday. Like, I don't know if I've ever thought when I've been working on May 5th, like, man, I'm really burning it at both ends here. Like, I'm really making it happen because I'm working on May 5th.
Could you have posted this on your Instagram story? You're writing MMQB, everybody out, probably getting ready to go drink. Don't matter. They want to question me. This is what I do on Cinco
very
de Mayo.
Very good. Very good, Jenny.
You know, it
absolutely.
Actually has the makings of a... I feel like you could make a little...
I could absolutely...
A nice
I
little
could,
beat here. Cinco de Mayo, you know, everybody out, probably getting ready to go drink. You know, probably
and we actually
mix
did,
it up.
And as part of our extensive show prep, we actually did Google Cinco de Mayo, which like I made the mistake, and I guess it's a commonly made mistake of thinking that it's Mexican Independence Day. Jenny, can you give us what the actual meaning of Cinco de Mayo is?
Correct. It's not Mexican Independence Day. That is in September. It is a celebration of the Mexican victory over French forces at the Battle of Puebla on May 5th, 1862, but really has evolved into a celebration of a Mexican-American culture. That's what most know it as.
Okay. So, again, Gerald McCoy very... I guess takes this event in 1862 very seriously because he considers it sacrifice too.
I think you can have your cake and eat it too, right? I mean, because you can't work out all day.
Yeah,
like it just there's a point of diminishing returns, right?
Right.
And then afterwards, you can replenish with like a what is one drink on Cinco de Mayo? Like a nice sangria.
Yeah. I would say a margarita.
Margarita, yeah.
That's what you'd be going for.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe like a rock
unless you're,
margarita
unless
then.
You're,
unless then you're just putting it right back on, right?
Unless you're a real pro and then you're going Tito's on the rocks, maybe.
Not Tito's,
not
right?
Tito's, not Tito's.
Maybe
Patron.
Just
Patron
yeah,
on the rocks.
Just,
yeah,
maybe
Patron.
Straight tequila
Tito's.
Here.
Well,
maybe
Tito's.
Not even on the rocks. Maybe
yeah.
just, you know.
Yeah.
I've been watching Real Housewives of Beverly Hills a lot, and I noticed that Denise Richards just always orders straight tequila. That's like her go-to drink. So that would be a move here. I will say that, you know, I didn't
like
realize.
Like neat or on the rocks?
Neat.
Meat.
Oh yeah,
oh,
just
wow.
like whatever. And if they don't have tequila, she doesn't get a drink. It's
that's
like
a veteran
it's remarkable.
Move. Yeah.
Wow.
But I will say that Arian's comments on McCoy, I didn't realize
we're
quite
kind
how
of like,
pointed
I,
they were.
Like and maybe it's because it's the Bucks they didn't get a ton. God, we're killing the Bucks here. Maybe because it's the Bucks, they didn't get a ton of attention. Like, I feel like when we read them earlier, like, if this had been with a different team, don't you think this would have gotten a little bit more attention?
Definitely. He's not as disruptive as he was 4 years ago. I mean, he said he's still a good player, but not as disruptive as he was 4 years ago is, you know, and then Arian said, I've got to evaluate him. Usually the age where they get paid the most in production doesn't match. We've got to find that out. I mean, that's, you know, that's a pretty strong comment. That would definitely give him cause to feel doubted.
But, like, I don't, like, that wasn't what he was arguing. He was arguing, like, somebody said he doesn't love football, which I don't know. Like, that feels straw man-ish, right? Like, is that I don't really remember anybody saying that.
As someone who...
But again, maybe that's Tampa. Maybe it's just because the Bucks and I missed it.
As someone who also enjoys propelling himself on various perceived slights, real or not real, I can say that sometimes when you're just mad enough, stuff just enters your consciousness and then it becomes
so
real.
So you know how to manufacture motivation.
Like, so sometimes if I'm angry, it's, you know, you know this is not a real example, but it's, oh, so Albert doesn't think I can write, okay, you know, and then but you
I'll
never
show
said
him.
That I mean you might think that, which is,
but is it, oh, but would writing angry be productive?
Well, I mean, plus it during a workout just sometimes comes out, you know. Sometimes in my workout when we're doing med ball slams, the teacher's like, yeah, hey, you hate your boss, slam the ball, yeah, you hate your job, yeah, slam the ball, and you're just, you know, and then you
what
start to enjoy it.
I do hate my
really
boss.
Does this
I
really
do
happen?
Hate my job.
This does happen. They try to get you pumped up during
they get you pissed off. All right, Brandon, you can join. We need Brandon to come in because Brandon is losing it now.
Yes. What's up?
So your thoughts on Jenny's...
I'm 100% behind this.
On Jenny's, like, CrossFit or whatever the hell it is she's doing?
I agree. I mean, got to let out the aggression.
That's right. Thank you, Brandon. Thank you. It's her fine method, actually. It's a very good class. Circuit training.
Screw
really
your
enjoy
boss.
It. Yeah. Think about the person you hate. Slam the ball. It's really motivating.
Hey, look, anything that you can get a good workout in and let out that aggression that
100%.
You get from everyday work, I am 100% with
therapeutic.
It.
Thank you. Thank you.
That coworker who blew you off for the drink last week. Screw him.
Screw him.
Right. The next step to that, though, would be to actually find, like, because those are, like, generic things, right? You hate your boss. You hate your job. But, like, you know, you're mad at your sister for, you know, like.
You don't love
like,
football.
Yeah. Like, very specific, you know, yeah. Very specific. That's the next step of, you know, training.
So, like, Olympic that, then they don't have to be, like, one-on-one classes?
Yeah. Like they just have to know everything about you.
Like, maybe
you
know? It, like,
oh, right.
Does it be, like, $300 every 45 minutes?
It's a really good
something
Lifetime
like that.
Movie about that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, all right. News item number 5.
I got it. Cowboys
first.
Cowboys COO Stephen Jones told Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio last week that there is no timetable on getting a deal done with Ezekiel Elliott, but called Elliott the straw that stirs our drink. Yeah, nice little... In February, Elliott, Jones said, we certainly saw that Gurley got paid, and we know that that's probably where it starts, and we'll go from there. What a beautiful, like, little bit of legalese there. Like, I acknowledge the fact that another running back got paid, and this may also be a situation where that exists. Like,
we
you know,
do have a running back on
we,
our roster.
We also
we
have
also
a running back.
Pay players.
Okay, so just because I know Steven's a pretty intelligent guy, I wonder if, like, he said that as a way of stalling Zeke, right? Like, his way of, like, listen, we're going to take care of you. We just might need to get to these other guys first, right? Like, he's saying all these nice things about him, and you have to wonder, like, because I think there's always, I think, like, when you're in a contract negotiation, like, I don't think these things happen by mistake, right? And so I, like, sort of wonder if it's like, well, they had to take care of Lawrence, right, DeMarcus Lawrence. They got to take care of Amari Cooper. They got to take care of Dak Prescott. Those guys are actually going into contract
like
years.
Dak needs to be taken care of, like, now.
Right. So yeah. Would you say nice things about Zeke to sort of stall him? You know what I mean? Like, your time's coming, bud. Like, and here's what we're going to pay you. And I'm willing to say it publicly. That's sort of what this that's sort of what this feels like to me. Am I crazy for thinking that?
If I'm Ezekiel Elliott, I am 200,000 miles away from that facility right now, and I'm not showing up without a contract.
And that's why, I'll tell you what, I agree with that, because I think that that position is a different deal. I think that's what Le'Veon Bell should have done after 3 years. I think that's why he missed the boat, because he's not getting paid until what year? Last year would have been year 5, so this is going into year 6 for him, right? No, this is year 7 for him, right? I think every time a running back steps on the field, his value diminishes. Every single time.
Including voluntary minicamp?
Voluntary minicamp's not contact, Jenny. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing. But I think this is the one position where I would never argue. Like a run, this is for the same reason they all come out early, right? Like for the same reason, like Miles Sanders at Penn State, right? Like only really played 1 year, but he knows, like, if I go back to school for another year, that's more mileage on my body.
Right.
I can't do that. And so I think in every case, these running backs, like, get your money when you can, because it can go away really, really fast. And I actually think, guys, it makes sense for the Cowboys to pay him now. He's so important to what they do. And he's been so important to what they do the last 3 years. Like, when he's in, they're a different team, right? So wouldn't it make sense, if you've got the cap space to do it, you have the flexibility to do it, to pay him now so you're out of the guaranteed money when he gets into his sixth year, right? Because if you pay him now, the guaranteed money is mostly going to be the next 2 years. That's year four and year five for him, right? And then you hope he's still a good player in year six and year seven, but by then you're out of the guaranteed money. So you do have the flexibility to move on at that point. I think it makes sense for everybody to sort of – I think it sort of makes sense for everybody to do it now. And the Rams are in that position now too, where it's like Gurley, we don't know where Gurley's at, right, physically. Well, they paid Gurley after 3 years, and now they're coming into – they're going to be coming in after this year into the point where they're going to have some flexibility to get out of that deal. And lo and behold, like, he's banged up, right? So – I think it makes sense for the player to hold out. I also think, like, in a lot of these cases, if you've got a running back of that level, and there aren't very many of them, taking care of them early makes sense too, just to give yourself flexibility down the road.
Yeah, if you plan to pay them, it's better to do it early. That's what the Rams' approach with Gurley was. I guess the question is, you know, will they give him what Gurley got, you know, because of the concerns we're seeing with – now, you know, Gurley's had knee issues before, so maybe it's a slightly different case.
I'd almost argue, though, that he's more important. I think Zeke right now, and it's not that his talent is better than any running back's talent in the league, but I would argue that Zeke is probably more important to the Cowboys operation than any other running back in the league, because Dak's been a little up and down, right? Because defensively they're getting better, because the offensive line's such a strength, and he sort of unlocks that strength, right? I just think because of – and it's not that he's the best running back in the league. I just think because of the circumstances the Cowboys are in and so many guys going into contract years, some guys getting older, like they're in a window right now to win right – they're in a window to win right now. And it just sort of feels like if you take Zeke out of the equation, you'd lose a lot, like maybe more so than other teams, where the Rams have Goff and Cooks and McVay, and like the Rams, I think, have proven they'd be okay without him. I think the Cowboys are in a little bit of trouble if they don't have Zeke in there, and a happy Zeke in there.
And – that sort of speaks – obviously the Rams went out and got a bunch of weapons in the past game, so maybe it's a little bit different. But I do think this is where, like, the coaching question comes into play, right? And it's like if you're not – you know, in Los Angeles, you figure, well, McVay will figure it out, right? And you don't necessarily think that in Dallas.
Right. But I don't know. I just think he's like I think as of right now – and this could change in 6 months. But as of right now, I think he's probably the most important running back in the league.
He's the straw that stirs the drink.
What a strange analogy. I've never been a fan of that one.
That's Reggie Jackson, right? I think. Is that right? I think it's Reggie Jackson. Because I think he said, I'm the stir that straws the drink.
I'm the straw that stirs the drink.
I'm the stir that straws the drink.
I'm the straw that stirs the drink, right. So I think it was Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, you make everything work together. Yeah.
When they were winning championships here in the 70s.
Just never would have occurred
before
to
my
me.
Time, too.
Just I mean, my rosé wine doesn't even need a straw. It's just pre-stirred.
I like it. Well, she's cocky about it now, too.
It's so good. I'm very happy. Honestly, I had a line prepared, and like halfway through the podcast, I was just going to say, Albert, we're all a little thirsty. And because I didn't think you had it. I didn't think you had it. This is great.
You doubted him. That's going to fuel Albert's next workout. All my doubters at Sports Illustrated.
I'm going to take that medicine ball, and it is going to hit the ground so freaking hard.
That's right. Try to break the floor is another thing they tell us.
They tell you to break the floor.
Sorry to interrupt. Just an FYI. Reggie Jackson, in his autobiography, admitted that he did not make that statement.
Wow. Really? Wow. This is interesting information.
Wait, so he admitted he stole it?
No, he admitted that he did not say that. He didn't say that.
Who did?
I don't know who, but it wasn't him.
Wait, so he said he took, because he did say it, right?
I mean, it was in a story in 1977, but in his autobiography, he said it never happened, at least not like he said it did.
Wow.
Interesting.
So that must have been the maybe the reporter was taking notes and didn't have a recorder.
Maybe the reporter was just thinking of his drink, and that was what popped into his head.
I don't know how reporters did their jobs in the 70s.
He might have been drinking a drink. I feel like we hear about the glory days of the 70s, and I feel like...
Well, let's go from the 70s to 2019 now, because we were actually sitting in the office. We're doing this off the cuff.
Right.
But I thought that this would be a great way to welcome in the kind of the quiet time in the NFL, and just this happened organically. You were sitting there, Connor, when it happened, I believe, right? And like I think we've kind of found something here, right, Jenny?
Well, I got to give credit to Connor, actually, because I feel like my deep dive into the Instagram comments this morning was sort of done in tandem with Connor on a group chat. We were sort of discussing some things that we saw in the comments. But I feel like the comment sections on any NFL players' posts are really an underrated source of content. Mm-hmm. So Saquon posts his photo from the Met Gala with Brady, Edelman, and Odell.
Pretty standard.
Standard.
Yeah.
I feel like we probably shouldn't get into all the different comments that were going on underneath it. But there were a couple of interesting ones. Among them, Brady saying, what did he say? Let's make it happen. You know, all these players together. I mean, Brady.
But with the eyeball emoji, too.
No. That was my own editorializing. Oh, that was my response to it, Albert, was the eyeball emoji. But really, I mean, Brady on his own, his comments are just a story. I mean, his Instagram activity is fascinating to me, that he's always like liking and commenting. And if it actually is him,
sometimes
it's very active.
Sometimes he like comments with hearts too.
A lot of times he uses emojis. Well, hearts on Giselle's post, which I think is pretty sweet. Yeah.
Wouldn't Instagram sort of count as like a mind poison for him? Like as someone who...
Yeah, that's what's interesting
to me
about it. Yeah.
You know, wouldn't that count as like... That's the equivalent of eating like five bags.
That's like if you're trying to be super positive, mm-hmm. I don't know that Instagram's the place to be.
What's the thing? The four agreements.
Four agreements.
Feels like this would be.
This would not be one.
It would
of the
be
agreements.
A disagreement. Yeah. I also uncovered some like.
I disagree. I disagree with going on the Instagram comments.
Yeah. I mean, I also uncovered some like Penn State football drama. Right. Another eyeball emoji with Tommy Stevens, who was the presumed starter after Trace McSorley left, was out for the spring football, and he had a shoulder injury. And then after the spring game, I attended the spring game with my dad. We saw him on the sidelines. My dad was telling me that this guy was probably going to be the starter. Then a few days later, I see a headline that he's entered the transfer portal. And so I was like,
we could do a whole
transfer
podcast.
Portal.
Totally, yeah. So then Tommy comments on Saquon's post, you know, I hope that this is your second favorite, Tom. He's referring to Brady. LOL. But then a bunch of Penn State fans are commenting under it. Hey, why'd you enter the transfer portal? And Tommy replies, ask CJF, which are James Franklin's initials. So that was another eyeball emoji.
Wow. CJF stand for Coach James Franklin?
Oh, maybe that's it. CJF.
Coach James Franklin.
I thought James
like his middle name? Like
I actually don't know
like
the
he's,
answer.
Like he's C. James Franklin?
I'm a... To take my the second thing on this podcast, I will take
James
my Penn
Joffrey Franklin.
Oh, okay. So it is just coach.
Jeffrey.
I've lost my degree twice now on this podcast. but yeah, so that was another eyeball emoji. I mean, there were some other things that, you know, we're talking about like social lives, some interesting comments, but I feel like that's probably pretty standard.
So it's like a new place to find information.
This is a new place to find information. We've already, you know, encountered two things, right? You know, Brady would love to partner with Saquon Barkley.
Yeah,
I mean, of course.
I'm glad the transfer portal came up too, because that would be great if there was something like that in the NFL. Like, if before free agency, right?
Oh,
like
a guy decides
he's like, I'm done with my current team, right?
I mean, Deshaun Jackson essentially and Antonio Brown essentially just put themselves in the transfer portal this offseason.
So 2 weeks before free agency or something, somebody enters the transfer portal.
Antonio Brown enters the transfer portal. This is brilliant. Yeah. Why is there not an NFL version of this?
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
New CBA, guys. Pay attention.
I could just see Antonio Brown's Twitter post. I have entered the transfer portal.
Imagine just like the blonde mustache. Like, I have entered the transfer portal.
And it would be followed by like 3 days of everybody trying to figure out what it means. It would be fantastic. It would be content for weeks.
We need to make this happen.
Can't wait for free agency again.
So you could have it for both free agency and trades then, right? Like you could have it like a guy could do it as like a passive aggressive like F you to the team he's leaving.
Totally.
Like 2 weeks before free agency. Or he could enter the transfer portal as like, I want to trade. right?
This is so great.
So it could work for both.
It's so much funnier in the NFL context.
Yeah. And then maybe when he entered the transfer portal, he couldn't go back.
Like that. Once you enter the transfer,
right? So like once you enter, you can't re-sign with your old team, right? Like so.
Wow.
There's no turning.
I think
back.
We have like a good idea here.
We do because it's because
then maybe the guy can start talking to other teams or whatever. So he enters
right.
the transfer.
Actually,
portal.
It's good because it's like, oh, you've given the agent permission to seek a trade for so and so, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Josh Rosen was put in the transfer portal. Did you say that? No. Josh Rosen,
Dan McAdell,
against his own.
We're making the NFL better here. We need to institute a transfer portal.
This is a great idea. This is the best idea we've had on the podcast.
This is the best idea that's come from this podcast, no question about it.
They need to be sucked up into it and then, you know, like the tubing, and then like appear at the other facility. You know?
Hey, once you go in, you're not going to be the same coming out. I don't know where I'm getting Brandon. I think Brandon's like shaking.
We were wondering whether to continue the podcast throughout the summer. I think that look kind of sort of nudged us in one direction for sure. Yeah.
I don't know if Brandon's pleased with this edition of the podcast.
Just shut it down. Let's go drink some rosé.
Sounds like we've already been.
All right, you guys enjoy the rosé. I'm going to get to the six pack. And you guys know how the six pack works. Every week on Tuesday, I put the call out. For questions on Twitter, I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit the little heart emoji, and you get an answer here. Start question number one from Jermaine Jones. How would you rate the teams in the NFC North, top to bottom? Right now, I would say the Bears would have to be the top team going in. You'd expect a year two jump for Mitch Trubisky in his second year working with Matt Nagy and what Matt Nagy is trying to build there. If he can be better, they can be better. Obviously bringing in the Iowa State running back Montgomery should make a difference for them, and the defense should be outstanding. The one little thing that makes you hesitate a little bit with them is the loss of Vic Fangio, one of the best defensive coordinators in football. I still think that they are in the best division in football, probably the favorite going in. And I mean, from there, I think you have to go Minnesota, Green Bay, Detroit, although I could see that getting mixed up in any way. I think, a wide-open division. And it's possible Matt LaFleur brings the best out in Aaron Rodgers, and some of the defensive additions they've had over the last couple of years all of a sudden come together. So the Packers have high-end potential. The Vikings were my Super Bowl pick last year. And I certainly think with some improvements in the offensive line, obviously drafting Garrett Bradbury is a big deal. Maybe getting Pat Elflein, a different version of Pat Elflein, will make a difference. I think they've got high-end potential. And even the Lions, in year two with Matt Patricia, you could see them make a jump. So I think it's quite possibly the best division in football, the most competitive division in football. And I think the Bears go in, presuming you get a little bit better version of Mitch Trubisky in there. My guess is that you probably see the Bears win the division again. Question number two, this is from James Tabor. It's at All About Saints 9. What grade would you give the Saints offseason overall? Again, I think a lot of their improvements are going to be internal because they're so young. And so what do you get from Marcus Davenport? What do you get from Tre'Quan Smith? Those guys going from year one to year two. You know, and then obviously you've got the guys who are going to be going into their primes now, those year three guys that were the foundation for the turnaround a couple of years ago, and that's Alvin Kamara, that's Ryan Ramczyk, that's Marshawn Lattimore, that's Marcus Williams. It's as good a young core as there is in football, and so I think you would expect a lot of the improvement to be internal, but you look at some of the moves they made to bring in guys from the outside. I think going and getting Eric McCoy in the draft, it's a very reasonable way to address losing Max Unger, who retired. I think Jared Cook is a great fit for what Sean Payton likes to do there. Mario Edwards and Malcolm Brown on the defensive line, two pretty good pieces. They lose Mark Ingram, but bringing in Latavius Murray, I think that's a representative way to deal with that loss. So I give the Saints a B+. You know, I think a lot of their improvement is going to be internal. And I think that you look at the free agent class, and it's not – splashy, but you see a couple guys in there that I think could make a big difference. Question number three from Craig McMuffin. That's at Craig with _A_K. I've got the Browns going to the AFC Championship game and the Chiefs being a wild card team. What bold prediction do you have for the upcoming season? I think Chris Sims actually of NBC stole mine, but I am with him on this. last year with the Niners, I was sort of a tap the brakes guy. It just felt like everything was happening really quick, and people were putting a lot of stock in a five-game winning streak at the end of the year. I think the Niners have a chance to make the playoffs this year. I think the Niners, if you look at the way their team's constructed, you get Jimmy Garoppolo back, you get Jerick McKinnon back on offense, and I think regardless of where the holes are on offense, we'll see how quickly Deebo Samuel comes along. I think Kyle Shanahan's going to find a way to make that into a top 10 group, provided the quarterback stays healthy. And defensively, that front has a chance to be really good now. You add Nick Bosa, you add Dee Ford to a group that already had the guys in the interior, and DeForest Buckner, Solomon Thomas, and Eric Armstead. That's got a chance to be one of the better D-lines in football. Sherman's, you know, I think going to be significantly better now, a year removed from the torn Achilles. Weatherspoon on the other side, I think you expect a little bit of a bounce back from him. So I think the Niners are going to be contenders in the NFC. How about that? That's my bold prediction. The Niners will be contenders in the NFC. Question number four from AK, that's at the dash line. Do you expect Haskins to start this year for the Redskins? I think at one point or another, he will be the starting quarterback, because history tells us that's the way it is. And so I think he's going to be given every chance to win the job in camp. I'd expect Colt McCoy to come back maybe at some point end of June, beginning of July. He's ready to go again, so in time for training camp. I think, you know, I know the coaches there really like Colt as a player. Obviously, Case Keenum's going to have his shot at it. I think ultimately, let's say by midseason, Dwayne Haskins is the starter there. And the reason why, this is, I mean, again, the most cerebral quarterback in this year's draft class. And I think he's the most pro-ready quarterback in this year's draft class based on what was on his plate in college, despite the fact that he's a one-year starter, an incredibly bright kid who was basically gobbling up pro concepts when he was in college, even as a one-year starter. And the difference between Dwayne Haskins in week one last year to Dwayne Haskins in week 14 was pretty immense. And that tells me that he can not only take coaching, but he can apply what he's learning. If he can do that, you're going to have a chance to start, and I think he will have a chance to start there in Washington. Question number five from Brett Frederick. That's at Brett_Frederick. What's the track record like for first-year head coaches with huge expectations and personalities to manage? This is a reference to Freddie Kitchens, of course. I came up with two examples that were fairly recent. And to be honest, one of them went okay. The other one didn't go quite as well. One was Ben McAdoo. That went well initially, right? Like, so you're dealing with big personalities. You're dealing with New York. You're dealing with big expectations. You got an older quarterback, so you feel like you're in a window to compete. He made the playoffs in year one, and then it all came undone in year two, okay? So that's one example. Another would be Vance Joseph in Denver. Lots of guys who had rings on their fingers. He was taking over a year after that team had won a Super Bowl. You know, they won the Super Bowl in 15. His first year was in 17. And so he had to manage a lot of different things on that roster. And a part of it, of course, a part of it was out of his control. The quarterback situation, which they didn't really know at the time, would turn out to be a mess, and it sort of firebombed any chance that he had there over his 2 years there. So those are the two most recent examples, but I don't think that either the Giants or the Broncos had the sort of ascending group of players that the Browns have. And so expectations, the situation Freddie Kitchens is in is at least somewhat unique. And then question number six is from Travis Wingfield at Wingfield NFL. What does Josh Rosen have to do in 2019 to prevent Miami from drafting his replacement in 2020? I would say he needs to be outstanding. And if Miami wins, say, seven or eight games, and Josh Rosen is really, really good, then I certainly could see a situation where if Tua and Justin Herbert and Jake Fromm live up to expectations, and if all of them are like top eight or nine picks in next year's draft, right? Let's just say top eight or nine picks. And now all of a sudden you've got to make a significant move up to get them, and you got to spend some of that draft capital you've been building, then maybe it makes sense to go forward with Josh Rosen. And maybe you'll be looking at it and you'll say, I see what everybody was talking about way back in 2014 when Rosen was a UCLA freshman. Everybody saw him as a prodigy. And so I think he's got to be outstanding. And I think if he's outstanding, they'll be a little out of range to take a quarterback in the top 10, which would make it more expensive to go get one and might make the logical answer to stick with Josh Rosen for another year, and then maybe a year later, if it doesn't work out, you're in the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. That's what I love about where the Dolphins are, though. What Chris Greer, Brian Flores, what they've done there, they've built this trove of draft capital for next year, and because now they've got Josh Rosen, they've built themselves a lot of flexibility at the position to wait when they want to wait, to take shot when they want to take a shot. It's all on the table for the Dolphins. Thanks, guys, for coming out. I appreciate it always, especially here in May and going into June when things are a little quieter. We always appreciate you guys coming out. I know Connor and Jenny do too. We want your feedback. This is a good time for us to play around with different things, to do different things here on the podcast. So any suggestions you guys have for how we can make this better, we'll take them. And you can get to me with those suggestions on Twitter at Albert Breer, on Instagram at Albert _ Breer, on Facebook at Albert R. Breer. And always remember to listen not only to this podcast, but also to the Monday Morning Podcast with Gary and Andy. You can get both those podcasts on one feed, the MMQB NFL podcast feed. And you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.